live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Each day, we have a choice of what goes into our consciousness. I believe that we should have as much information, insight, inspiration, and energy that provides us with positive options. And that's how we arrange the information in this program. For example, today, natural alternatives to the statin drugs. Tens of millions of Americans are on statins. Very serious side effects, but there are things that work better than statins with no side effects. So I'm going to give you that. Also, I'm going to talk about the herbs that kill the bacteria that cause urinary tract infection that 10 million American women suffer from each year. The latest on anti-aging through resveratrol. Also, I'm going to give you insights about what yoga does in helping people with mental problems. Then my guest in the second part of our program, Jennifer Cockrell King, who is a leading Canadian journalist, we're going to talk about the rise of urban agriculture and the new food revolution. Very exciting, positive, empowering insights. What you can do as an individual or as a group or as a community or a block to recreate something that was common in the 1930s and to about 1947, but then we stopped. Easier to go to a grocery store. Now we're getting back to our own backyards, but there's a lot more creativity in it than that. A compassionate call to the Occupy movement. I understand, having been an organizer, a community leader, and a person who has been a social dissident my entire life, what it means to be frustrated when you see such inequality in all things in our society. The question is, what is the best way to approach that so that at least we can have some constructive change that is possible? And I believe with the best of intents, the Occupy movement will completely disintegrate into nothingness unless it gets itself organized, gets behind one common idea. I'll share with you an idea that I believe you could all get behind, that we all need to get behind, and what happens when you do it right. A special look at Ronnie Cummings, who I filmed yesterday in San Francisco, what he's doing on genetic engineering. Very good stuff. And then how we could apply that. Also yesterday afternoon in Chicago, I spoke at length with a lead attorney representing about 100 different health groups in the United States. And I was invited to, in first week of June, to make a presentation. When I suggested what my presentation would be, this person said, "That's not going to fly." I said, "Why?" And this person was very honest, because every single person's coming has their own ideas of what their priorities should be, how they should go about it, and where they've gotten their funding, who their grassroots support is. And I said, "So what you're telling me is that rather than having 100 groups with a million people or more working together towards one common goal for 3 months, you'd rather have 100 groups with 100 or 1,000 people working separately and get nothing done. Just look at what actually gets achieved. You must have cooperation and single focus and spokespersons in that area." Anyhow, whether I do or do not end up going out to Chicago for that meeting after yesterday's meeting shows what's wrong with our health movement and why we haven't gotten any further than we have. But we are making progress. And it's interesting how they're looking at what we are doing and how many people are coming to Progressive Radio Network to download pages, 200,000, just like that, blink of an eye. Now, when was the last time 200,000 people downloaded articles from anything? And yet we have that regularly. 7,000 new listeners in a day, where CNN lost 23% of its total listenership, and MSNBC and Fox and and Link is in the doldrums, and Kern almost is flatlined. Yet no one's paying attention to what people really want. They're trying to shove down people's throats what they believe people should be listening to. So that, I'll give some insight into that a little later, of how we can really turn things around in a positive way. Also, some commentaries today. First, a commentary from Jane Hampshire about what our foreign corporations or foreign corporations will be doing now that Obama has empowered them to undermine our environment with our newest Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, free trade agreement. And that's being fast-tracked right now. Now, as I pose NAFTA, this TPP is NAFTA on steroids. But I want to let you know before it gets signed into law the reality of what will actually happen. So those of you who understand you have to get ahead of a problem will know what this problem is and how you've been sweet-talked into it, or you're not even aware of it at all. But you will be, because I keep up on all the international treaties and agreements. Also, what can 53% of all young college graduates in America do when they're unemployed? I'll give some insight. Who's ready for a solar superstorm? Not us, emergency officials warn, and that's from mainstream media. So you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. One nutrient that I know many of you are using, because I know that you're using compounding powders that contain a lot of it. But for the rest of the world, they're just maybe becoming aware that there's this substance called resveratrol. And they know that it's in red wine. And they know that that's good for them, for a lot of different reasons. This is from Science Daily. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Cell Metabolism. Resveratrol, shown in a new study to restore hope for anti-aging. Quote, resveratrol improves the health of mice on a high-fat diet, increases lifespan. Let me repeat that. Increases lifespan. That's from Dr. Sinclair, Harvard Medical School. Now, resveratrol is a molecule. It benefits us in many ways, but mainly its action on SRIT1. It's in the research on yeast and worms and flies, but I believe it could be extended to all other forms of life. It manifests in our metabolism. That's a good thing. And it also manifests in helping the DNA that's been altered in our body. That's a better thing. So this latest study shows that resveratrol can extend life in these laboratory experiments. And that's at very, very low doses. Now, what I did is a simple mathematical model of what would the amount be that an adult would have to have on a daily basis in order to see the same benefits. And I project that to be about 150 to 250 milligrams per day in tablet form, because then you can get more of it. If you had to drink that in wine, you're looking at a case of wine. What can help us if we need an antibiotic, or if we're doing something that might require antibiotics and we want to prevent the need for antibiotics? Garlic. This is from the Journal of Antimicrobial Chemotherapy, as published in Science Daily. Here's what it says. Researchers at Washington State University have found that a compound in garlic is 100 times more effective than two popular antibiotics at fighting the Campylobacter bacterium, one of the most common causes of intestinal illness. The discovery opens the door to new treatments for raw and processed meats and food preparation surfaces. Well, quote, this work is very exciting to me because it shows that this compound has the potential to reduce disease-causing bacteria in the environment and in our food supply, end quote. Okay, so I'm going to guess what they would do is get a vaporizing form of garlic, which would be liquefying it, and then spraying it onto meats. And indeed, that would help kill a lot of the surface bacteria. Here is the problem. The vast majority of bacteria in a piece of meat is not on the skin. It's inside the cell. Let me explain what happens. About 90% of all the blood in your body is not in your veins or arteries. That's what carries the blood to the cells. It's inside the cells. And so when you hang an animal up and you drain the blood out, you're only draining about 10% of the blood, because at the moment of death, there is such shock that the shock hormone, cortisol, goes to such a high level that the body goes into an acute shock, anti-shock state. That's why sometimes someone would get shot with a bullet and not realize they've been shot, because their body's in shock until they calm down. And frequently that's when they die, is when they come out of that hyper-shock state and the body's immune system collapses. By the way, some of the ways that historically in some of the Indian conflicts, those that were engaged in the conflict would put a rock into a bandana, tie that bandana so tight on their forehead from the back, like a tourniquet, but a tourniquet that intentionally forced the rock into their skin, and that would cause excruciating pain and bleeding, because you have profuse bleeding from the scalp because of how many blood vessels you have there. And then when they went into battle, if they were stabbed or shot, they would still be able to fight more, because the pain that their body is reacting to would have already set their body's cortisol levels at a much higher level. Interesting. In any case, you don't want to eat a piece of meat and think that because someone sprayed garlic on it that you're going to get the benefits of an antimicrobial effect. You won't, because 90% of the bacteria is inside the tissue. Because what happens when blood can't flow? Toxins can't be taken out of a cell. Then they go into putrefaction. And putrefaction is not the same as enzymatic degradation. When a peach biodegrades, when a head of lettuce biodegrades, it composts down. And at a particular point, microorganisms become pathological or pathogenic on it. But when meat has blood and the blood cannot drain from the body, the blood becomes a petri dish for bacteria. So just remember that when you have your chicken or fish or pork or beef or lamb, you're eating high levels of bacteria because it was in the blood. But here's the good news for everyone else. Let's just say that each day when you're doing your juicing that you throw in a couple bulbs of garlic. Now, if you throw in parsley at the same time, you really won't taste so much of that. If you put in apple and celery and cucumber, it's minimal, the taste. But what happens is the moment that garlic in the juice hits your mouth, it kills bacteria into the gums. In fact, if you really want to do a tremendous job for your gums not to bleed and be puffy, just gargle it around. Swish it around your mouth for about 30 seconds and swallow it down. Staph, strep in your throat, killed. Bacteria in your stomach, like Helicobacter, E. pylori, killed. Bacteria putrefying in your gut, killed. Little tiny creases in your intestine that are little pockets where diverticular material can get and create diverticulitis and acute inflammation. Pain turned off, because much of that is cleansed. That's how garlic should be used. And then, of course, just sautéing garlic until it's just golden but never brown. That's another way. So, good news, better than antibiotics and helping us keep healthy, garlic. Now, for those of you taking statins or knowing people who do take statins, I'm opposed to statins. In fact, I'm opposed to not all, but many of the routinely given drugs, because I know that there are alternatives that work. I've helped too many people get off drugs. But this is from the Archives of Internal Medicine. They're looking at postmenopausal women, and they're using statins increasingly because they have elevated cholesterol, and they want to bring down that cholesterol. Also, with elevated cholesterol, you're more likely to have a risk of diabetes. And so they're saying that, gee whiz, statins are ineffective for heart disease. This is the latest study. Quote, statins are prescribed to reduce cholesterol and coronary heart disease. The science behind statins, however, is suspect. According to Dr. Hyman, studies have only found statins effective to prevent second heart attacks, but not first heart attacks. Another study found statins may contribute to cardiovascular events. Although they have been prescribed to lower cholesterol, there are also serious questions as to whether cholesterol is related to coronary heart disease and heart attacks. In fact, in older patients, lower cholesterol levels are associated with higher rates of death from all causes. In 99 out of 100 men, says Dr. Hyman, the drugs have no therapeutic effect. They do, however, have significant side effects. In 15% of patients using statins, they report muscle damage, muscle cramps, muscle weakness, sexual dysfunction, liver and nerve damage. So that's a whole story to itself as to why we get hooked on using drugs that indeed are not really beneficial. It's because we're being marketed those drugs. So, what do we do about this? Here are some easy, inexpensive, natural ways to keep your cholesterol down, to help your heart, to lower the bad LDL cholesterol, and there's good science in the peer-reviewed literature about each one of these. Let me just give you six. Make it simple. No, I'll give you five. Five of them. Apples would be my number one. I'm talking about apples. Juicing apples. There was a Florida State University study that showed postmenopausal women who ate one apple per day lowered their LDL bad cholesterol and raised their HDL good cholesterol and also lost weight. So I'm suggesting that you juice three apples a day. And by juicing three apples with the skins on, you're able to get even higher benefits in your biochemistry. Now then, really, the poor person's protein has always been beans, legumes, and pulses. But beans are rarely thought of as lowering cholesterol, but they do. One cup of beans per day can lower LDL cholesterol by 24%. Well, a cup of beans is a serving. That's not a lot. High fiber, lowering your cholesterol, that's more than a drug could do it. And only good things can come from the bean. I would also start today, if you have elevated cholesterol, with oatmeal. Whole grains, all whole grains, are known to have soluble fiber, as are apples and beans. That reduces cholesterol. Then the superstar of nuts is the walnut. Walnuts are the highest among nuts in antioxidants and the omega-3 fatty acids. And that's why I've always suggested for vegans, like myself, by having flaxseed oil and walnut oil, cold-pressed, you're getting a superior form of the omega-3 fatty acids. And that can protect you against stroke, heart attack, and lower your cholesterol levels. And what is that? That's four, and I'll give you one more. Chocolate or coca. Coca, C-O-C-O-A, that's the main ingredient in chocolate. It's study after study after study. It lowers blood pressure. It decreases your stroke. It improves insulin resistance. It increases the HDL, the good cholesterol. It decreases death overall. And I would put coca against chocolate any day, or against statins any day of the week. So that is good. So five ways you can lower your cholesterol, improve your chance of living longer, lower your risk of stroke and heart attack, no side effects. And the science behind these five items is substantial. The science behind statins, no, it's crap. Especially when if you got rid of all the industry supported. Now, what do we do about urinary tract infections? Over 10 million American women suffer from urinary tract infections each year. There's a lot of reasons people get urinary tract infections, but guess what one of the most common is that we never discuss in our society? Bacterial contamination of the urethra. And bacteria can travel to the kidneys. That's rare, but that E. coli can travel right up that urinary tract into the bladder from wiping but not washing after defecation. We're a society that prides ourselves on cleanliness, and yet we are not clean. If you put a bidet in most people's apartments, they think they have a water fountain. In point of fact, you have a massive amount of deadly bacteria that evacuates from your body once, twice, three times a day. Wiping does not clean it. And then when you're exercising or walking or sitting, sweat migrates the water, and it then travels. The bacteria are very active, and they travel down from the anus into and around the vagina, into the urinary tract, into the urethra, and that's where you get infections. You think maybe that we could handle the idea of just practicing proper hygiene? We have trouble just putting alcohol in a paper towel and wiping down doorknobs and everything that we touch. We think it's kind of strange. Until you get one of these infections, then it's not strange. Well, have you ever had a urinary tract infection? Pain? Burning? A feeling of urgency during urination? Blood or pus in your urine? Fever? Chills? Nausea? Malaise? Very foul-smelling urine? Abdominal cramps? That's what it means. So here are the best ways of approaching this. First, the mustard oils derived from horseradish root and the nasturtium herb can be used as treatment for urinary tract infections. And a study on this found that a combination of extracts, and these are extracts from horseradish and nasturtium, two plants from the mustard family containing volatile mustard oils as the active ingredient, really strong antimicrobial properties, meaning they kill or inhibit the growth of microorganisms like bacteria. In a similar study, the same year, there were 87% decrease in the symptoms when used. Now, grapeseed extract is also good. By taking grapeseed extract, it's effective treatment against urinary tract infections and other infections as well. The grapeseed extract also has antifungal and antiviral properties to treat infections caused by fungi and viruses. And the University of Maryland Medical Center recommends 100 milligram capsules or 5 to 10 drops liquid grapeseed extract 3 times a day for treating infections. I do not recommend antibiotics because, well, first, they're dangerous. When you can use natural herbs, couch grass, elderflower, juniper, horsetail, lady's mantle, plantain, saw palmetto, yarrow, calendula, chamomile, fennel, ginger, Oregon grape root, St. John's wort, thyme, Yuva ursi. These are natural, non-toxic, antibacterial ways of helping keep the bladder walls clean of bacteria and reducing the likelihood of an infection. All good information, all of meant to help us live a longer, healthier life. Now, here's something from one of those issues that doesn't get addressed. No one's paying attention. By the way, I won't deal with it today, but the whole idea of praising President Obama for going over and doing his tap dance about Osama bin Laden, but no one paid attention to the treaty he signed that we're going to be in Afghanistan till 24. He just added a whole lot more, 10 more years onto our occupation. Why didn't anyone pay attention to that? In any case, we never pay attention to these treaties. Well, the newest treaty is called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. And the White House is fast-tracking it. It's a part of our whole free trade agreements. And this will include Australia, Brunei, Chile, Malaysia, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam, and Japan right behind that. And Canada and Mexico want in. Taiwan has announced its intention to meet its membership requirements, and China says it'll study all this. Now, here's what it is. At the beginning of the program, I told you that TPP is NAFTA on steroids. Let me explain this in the words of Jane Hampshire. Here's what she says. Under TPP, foreign corporations could receive compensation for loss expected future profits if local health, labor, or environmental laws limit their ability to do business. Now, just to understand, what does that mean? It means that, let's say, one of these countries had a corporation that wanted to do business in New York State, and they wanted to manufacture something, but the local laws, the state laws, the environmentalists all got together and says, this is bad for our water or air. Their next 5 years' worth of profits they would make, we would have to pay them. So if you interfere in someone making a profit, no matter how deadly the product, you have to pay them. Then the rights to acquire land, natural resources, and factories with no government oversight or review. Hence, no environmental risk assessment. So therefore, they could buy something right on a river, right on an aquifer. The Walk Hill upstate where New York City gets its water. They could build a toxic plant right on the shores. No oversight, no restrictions. Risks and costs of offshoring to low-wage countries eliminated. You no longer have to explain how you're going to offshore anything. Special guaranteed minimal standard of treatment for relocating firms. Right to move capital without limits. New rights covering vast definitions of investment, intellectual property, permits, derivatives. A ban on performance requirements and domestic content rules. Meaning no made in the USA, buy local, green jobs, none of that. And the rollback of regulations that were put in place to prevent another global economic crisis, such as too big to fail remedies. No regulations. So, this is according to Public Citizen, Sidney Wolfe's group. Quote, TPP undermines banking laws and incorporates SOPA and limits the ability of state and local government to protect the environment. Otherwise, U.S. taxpayers have to pay damages and U.S. courts have no authority. Quote, under TPP, foreign investors can skirt domestic courts and laws and sue governments directly before tribunals. Three private sector lawyers operating under the World Bank and UN rules to demand taxpayer compensation for any domestic law that investors believe will diminish their expected future profits. So, virtually anything that anyone wanted to manufacture in the United States, they would be allowed to do so, no matter how bad, toxic, dangerous it would be to the citizens, animals, or the planet. And if we in any way interfered in that process, they would sue us and we would have to pay them. Finally, who's ready for a solar superstorm? Not us, emergency officials warn. This is from Florida Today. This is a mainstream paper. Quote, atomic particles explode off the sun's surface with a force of millions of hydrogen bombs, clobber Earth's magnetic field in less than a day, and black out the electric grid for days or longer. Such a superstorm happened in 1859, called the Carrington effect. Solar winds smack the Earth within 18 hours, though the trip usually takes 4 days. Auroras lit the night sky as far south as Cuba and in Boston and London. People read the newspapers under the nighttime glow. A similar event now could cause $2 trillion in damage to the U.S. power grid, experts say. And Florida, while well-versed in hurricanes, has no experience with such massive magnetic storms. So on Tuesday this week, about 100 emergency managers gathered at Crown Plaza to learn how to brace for a solar superstorm. And while such power storms are rare, scientists say it is just a matter of time before one bombards Earth again. Quote, a space weather event is going to introduce a whole different set of dynamics, William Bryan, Deputy Assistant Secretary at the U.S. Department of Energy, told emergency managers from throughout the state. The 3-day training exercise closed to the general public was funded under the federal stimulus bill. Quote, this threat of geomagnetic disturbance has a lot of attention in Washington, Bryan said during his keynote address. This is not science fiction. It's real. These things are really happening and could really have an impact on us, end quote. Solar storms induce the dramatic green glow of the northern lights. The main concern for the power grid is the more powerful solar events called coronal mass ejections, huge solar wind blasts, that can disrupt Earth's magnetic field. Quote, just billions of tons of plasma gas blasting out, says Bill Murtaugh, senior forecaster of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Space Weather Prediction Center in Boulder, Colorado. Earth's magnetic field can get temporarily smushed under the onslaught of solar wind, disrupting radio communications, GPS, and damaging satellites. Basic electronic equipment such as laptops would still work, but in an entire solar storm, millions could be left without power, running water, phone service. Airlines would have to steer clear of flights near the poles because of communications problems and radiation. So, how prepared are we? We are not. Quote, This is one of those non-predictable events, said Brian of Department of Energy. We know it's going to happen. We just don't know when, how big this event will be. We don't know that, end quote. Well, how about in the next 12 months? It's going to happen. In about 12 months to 14 months, it will happen. What we don't know is how bad it will be. My suggestion is plan for the worst. If you plan for the worst, then you've done nothing that will cause a downside, but if the downside happens, you're protected. I have a complete article on this, completely updated, on GaryNull.com. Now, in about 5 minutes, 10 minutes now, we're going to go to our guest. And but before we do that, let's go over and say hello to Lou Ann Panessi. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hi, Gary. Amazing information. I know everyone enjoys getting these updates and hearing things that essentially no one else is going to hear. I just kind of wanted to share something with you about what had happened at the last retreat you had last year. And I know that the retreat you're having in June is probably going to be your last retreat in Florida. But people had been commenting to me about one particular workshop. It was an energy exchange workshop that you did. And I don't think people understood the whole concept of energy exchange until you actually worked with them in this. And essentially, it was about letting go of old emotions that kind of keep a grip on you from the past. A lot of the times, the things that happened to us in the past are in that context, and they don't hold true. They're not valid in the present day, and yet it's the only frame of reference we seem to have. So if we have an event that seems even remotely similar to something that happened in the past, we immediately go back to the reactions we had back then, thinking that the situation is going to be resolved the same way. And what are the things that people experienced after they had this energy exchange work was it's as if they were able to finally let go of all these negative emotions and get really fully present in the moment of the day. And I wonder if Matt has any of those, any of the reactions that people have had.
I don't know. Matt's not in today.
Oh, okay.
Matt's not there today.
Okay.
Let me just ask Myron. Myron is in New York. Oh, Matt, you haven't. No, Matt is in today. He was out earlier. I'm on the road, so I don't know what's going on in my own studio. Mm-hmm. But let's hear something that I haven't heard and see what they have to say. This is the day before the end of the retreat,
yeah.
And I'm always interested who really has got the idea that in life there's only one issue we should focus on. How authentically are we living? Now, that's not the same as how successful are you? What have you done to please others? Have you been a good person? This is a more basic issue. Are you living an authentic life as to who you actually are, or along your life did you adapt and sometimes maladapt because other people needed you to be a certain way for them, and then one day you became so interested in doing what other people expected that you lost sight of who you really were? And so I wanted to see through all of our workshops, and if not, then I would do something, and I'm not going to go into what I do, because it's just too esoteric for most people to understand. Let's just call it an energy exchange, where if they volunteer for it and they want it, fine. If not, fine. For people who just feel that they are filled with information, but they're not going to sustain it and they're not going to actualize it. You had this, as you know, down in Texas, and you saw 100 people had it there. So this is... This, I guess, then, is what someone recorded. I haven't seen it, and we'll hear what they have to say.
For many, many years now, more than a decade and a half, I've been suffering through post-traumatic stress, and it involves a lot of things, physically, psychologically, emotionally, and I've sought a lot of treatments, many, many treatments, none of which completely dealt with it, and from time to time, when things get extremely stressful in my life, all of the symptoms come back. Nervousness, stomach problems, insomnia, complete agitation, unhappiness, you know, those other things that just are the blanket of your life. And in that time period between 3:40 and 5:55, the whispers of the palm leaves were rustling against the hut, and the sun was going down. I tried to imagine not only being immersed in nature, but actually feeling the embrace of nature. And it's an incredible sense of peace and calm. And I gently, gently judged the time, because it was getting darker, that it was approximately 2 hours or more, and it was. And I felt a great deal of lightness just by moving my first hand, and then slowly, you know, getting up from the bed. And I felt an intensity of just electricity run through my body, and then a calmness again emerged, and I was able to get up gently. And I just looked around and thought, oh, I can't believe this. This feeling must be like rising from the dead, because truly when your body and your mind and your spirit is so agitated for so many years and you can't find a solution to it, and no matter what you do, pray, meditate, and see people, and nobody seems to find the answer. There's no resolution. But this moment, I can have intense happiness and elation and a sense of freedom and lightness that I've never experienced in my life. And I want to thank you. Thank you.
My name is Irina Topcheva. I am from south of Russia, from Georgia, former USSR. My experience, healing experience from Gary Knoll's ranch is can be described many different ways. But as a today's experience I had, which I wasn't prepared for it, and just happened because I was one of the chosen person to be, Mr. Knoll decided to felt that I needed that energy, and truly I needed that energy, because from my illness, my body was very much irritated and disabled, kind of. With the motion I was making, walking, I cannot run anymore from my treatments, chemotherapy treatments, and it's really slowed me down previously. And I'm trying to gain my energy I used to have before, which I used to be a very happy person, and I think I am. But that energy that I lost in my treatments was making me very unhappy. And today's experience in beautiful room, which is white like angels can have a peace there, it was amazing experience. It's almost you cannot describe, but it has so many factors that you can really touch. Many different ways. It's not the only energy. It's everything includes. It gives you happiness. It gives you peace. It gives you a sense of feeling of, okay, you are again who you want to be. And when I get up after 2 hours from there, and I felt this energy, I could walk straight. I wasn't bending anymore the way I walked in. My walking out was already so much alive, and I felt myself is rejuvenating my inner feeling. And my mental capacity, because of the treatment, also I felt that was diminished. And at this point, I felt like a light was on top of my head. And the energy I wanted, happily coming down to the steps and going to some place that I wanted to go, it was already almost no problem, absolutely. And I believe after tonight and tomorrow is the last day, that energy I still carry on. I feel it. It's something that almost gives you some, diminishes the age and gives you back your old, maybe young age, something like that. That was my feeling. So it's a true belief. I am what I experienced, because I've been in many other treatments, and this is one of the most powerful things I ever experienced in my life.
That's interesting. Okay, Luann, we've got to rush, but thank you for sharing that with us.
Well, I think it's important for people to hear real-life people and their responses to some of the things that have happened to them, the transition that has happened to them when they actually attend one of your retreats. It's not like a regular vacation. It's a wonderful opportunity to reconnect with, like you said, your authentic self.
Okay. Luann Panessi. Luann, if anyone wants to speak to you, they were filled. What is your number?
I'm at 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198.
Thanks a lot, Luann.
All the best.
It's always fun to listen to something from the past. Now, we're going to go to our guests in just about 2 minutes, but I have our special the weekend. This is for all of you who've said, where's your brainy? We've been out of it for 5 months. It's just back today. So the good news is that brainy is back today, but I'm going to give what is quite possibly the best special in the history of my ever-giving specials. Because here's what you're going to do. This is only costing you $71. You're going to get $270 worth of product. You heard me right. That's not an error. $70, $270 worth of product. Now, first for Brainy itself. I designed Brainy as a supplement that would contain the things you normally do not find, like pregnenolone, 20 milligrams, and phosphatidylserine, 200 milligrams, and glycerophosphorylcholine, 250 milligrams, caprylic acid, linoleic acid, linoleic acid, tyrosine, and glutamine, and aspartic acid, and Siberian ginseng, and rosemary, blue cohosh, carnitine, and inositol, choline bitartrate, taurine, glutathione, phenylalanine, ginkgo biloba, magnesium, calcium, pantothenic acid, B12, and B1. So these are the nutrients that I consider the single most important in this combination, and though I never make a claim of what something does, the product is called Brainy. You can look up the information on the internet and in any peer-reviewed scientific literature of nutrients, and you get the idea. Now, here's what I'm giving you as my gift today. When you order one bottle of that, here's what you're paying nothing for. Bone health, 120 vegetarian tablets of vitamin D, calcium, magnesium, zinc, silicon, and boron in the right balance, and that is free. Also, and this is today, I'm giving you an $85 bottle of Power Berry Blast chewables with all the great nutrients in it, free. Free. Like or Camus, organic Aronia melancarpa, black currant, blackberry, pomegranate, blueberry, strawberry, Hawaiian noni, pineapple, guava, orange, apple, raspberry, mango, mangosteen, goji, acai, kapuka, black soybean hull extract, blue cornmeal, tart cherry, cranberry, wild bilberry, green tea with polyphenols, watermelon juice, hawthorn berry, grape skin, grape seed, prune, elderberry, natural flavors, oat bran, and that is the chewable Berry Blast, and it's $85 free. Also, I'm throwing in free a $90 bottle of Rock Hard and 60 tablets, and this has the ohimbe bark and velvet bean, Mura Puama, a horny goat, oat straw, sal palmetto, ginkgo, ginger, Siberian ginseng, the Eleutherococcus sinticosus, wolfberry, ashwagandha, county mallow, anise, cardamom, cinnamon, and the bark powder. This is the best of the best for men. It's called Rock Hard. All those are free. One time, you get $200 worth of free ordering one Brainy that's been out of stock for 6 months and is back in today. Call the following number, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. So there has never been a special where you're getting what, $270 with a free, or $270 value at $70, $200 free or until supplies last, which I think we've got enough for everyone. Okay, that's that. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Now let's go to British Columbia, where my guest, Jennifer Cockrell King, a Canadian journalist and author whose articles have been published in many of Canada's leading magazines and newspapers, the Chicago Sun, National Post, is on board. She is the author of Food and the City, Urban Agriculture and the New Food Revolution. Nice to have you with us, Jennifer.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jennifer, just today I received a press announcement out on the road where I'm at filming from the World Watch Institute, which is best known for their research and publications on the state of the world that usually addresses global issues of sustainability and future trends. And it's about the city of Cleveland, which now faces food insecurity, a lack of grocery stores, and a population facing an epidemic of chronic disease, most notably diabetes and obesity. Then the article compares this with another Ohio city, Akron, that is pushing forward with urban farms, local markets, and a rapid increase in locally grown produce. The city even hosts 7-week training programs to guide a new generation of urban farmers. And now even some Ohio universities such as Case Western are getting into the act to help cities such as Cleveland to begin urban agricultural products to face the chronic illness dilemma. So I'm going to keep quiet. We don't have a lot of time. And I just want you to tell us about what we can expect, what we can do, and how we can go about doing it.
Great. Well, there certainly is a lot of enthusiasm about urban agriculture, which is just a fancy term for growing and producing food in cities, by the way, and it's certainly nothing new. We used to grow a lot more food in cities. We used to call them victory gardens or vacant lot gardens. But there are cities now that, because of economic situations and because we really got rid of the smaller independent grocery stores that could stay afloat in neighborhoods, and we pushed our grocery shopping into the suburbs and into the big box stores. So we get these strange things called food deserts in cities. So we have people living in cities, and they just don't have access to proper nutritious food. They have access to, you know, convenience stores and liquor stores, but that's not grocery shopping. And so people are rebelling against that, and they're planting their own gardens, and they're becoming commercial farmers in cities. And certainly places in the Midwest, there's a lot of activity happening, like you mentioned, in Akron. So yeah, it's very encouraging to see people taking back control of what goes into their bodies and what goes into their mouths.
Well, given the economic strains many people across the world are experiencing, there's a kind of financial benefit to trading off wholesome grown produce for cheap industrial processed food. As a result, big industrial agriculture has come to dominate America's food production. So when we speak about the threat of global insecurity, what are we really speaking about? Define what food insecurity means, and how is big agriculture contributing to it?
Well, there are a lot of different definitions of food security and food insecurity. I can give you my two cents. We can have access to a lot of food products that we can stuff in our mouths and our bodies. It doesn't mean that they're particularly healthy or nutritious. So we can be overfed and still food insecure, in my opinion. And that certainly is a case in our modern industrialized nations like Canada and the U.S. and places in Europe. So there's that situation. We also have situations where people just don't have the money to buy groceries of any nature. And we've kind of got this funny inverted pyramid happening in industrialized food where the cheapest products, the most accessible products for people are the least nutritious, and we pay a significant amount of money for, you know, fresh, healthy product, which is a little bit strange because usually the cheaper, nutrient-bereft products are highly processed. So it's actually more energy-intensive to make them, yet they seem to somehow come out the other end of the industrial food system as being a cheaper product.
Okay, there are three areas I'd like for you to go into, if you would, please. One is that we're seeing beekeeping in major cities, and that's very important. Secondly, we're seeing fruits and vegetables that fare best in urban settings, and give us some ways to extend the growing season in more northern climates. And then finally, tell us about the small plot intensive farming occurring in Vancouver, where as much as $72,000 can be grossed from a single half acre of city land.
Okay, we'll go through those in order then. Urban beekeeping is something that wasn't really on my radar when I was starting out with my book. But I kept coming across it, and I'm really excited about urban beekeeping these days. So one in three mouthfuls in our food system is dependent on pollinators such as bees. So these are agents that pollinate our food, and they're almost invisible. We don't really think about the role that that bees play in our food system. And what is happening currently, and has been happening for quite some time, is colony collapse disorder. I'm not an expert on colony collapse disorder, but basically commercial beehives and bee pollination units tend to work in large-scale farms in the countryside, and basically these are hives that are placed in, you know, almond groves and citrus groves and in, you know, large-scale monocrop plantings. And the bees are very limited in their diet as a result. So they kind of have this one-note diet, which doesn't do their health any good. They're usually overworked and overstressed. They're being moved around a lot, and that's quite disruptive for them. And also they're being exposed to agrochemicals, which many agrochemicals are specifically designed to be insecticides and to kill insects and pesticides. So the rural bees are dying off in what we're calling colony collapse disorder. It's very troubling. It's very devastating for the food system. And what we're finding, though, is the urban bees are doing very well. They aren't suffering from colony collapse disorder. And it's probably a combination of the fact that they have the ability to forage nectar from a bunch of different sources in cities, from trees to flower beds to little community gardens to, you know, anything. So they have a varied diet, which, as we know, is a healthy diet. And they can stay in one spot. They have places to get out of the wind and the rain if they need to, and they're just very healthy. So in places like France, which is Europe's largest agricultural producer, they're depending on urban bee populations to help repopulate the rural bees, because rural bees are still dying off and urban bees are thriving. And, you know, it's just a wonderful thing to have. We have, you know, pollinators in our cities anyways. We've got wasps and we've got different types of bees. So including honeybees into the mix is really not a problem. And so people are a little bit afraid of having, you know, honeybees in the city, but we already live with a lot of stinging insects, so
okay,
I don't.
Now let's go to the second issue.
Sure.
The whole idea of small plots can actually bring in a lot of money, as little as a half acre, $72,000 in gross income.
Yeah, I mean, this is called spin farming. It's a newer phenomenon, and basically it's a methodology that has been developed to allow people to become commercial farmers without the huge outlay of cash for a rural farm, which is sort of beyond the ability of most independent farmers. So what you do is you can canvas your neighborhood, essentially, for bits of land, so either a front lawn or a back lawn or, you know, somebody's excess space in their garden, and you pay them a very small rent or nothing at all, usually, and you turn over the sod and create, veggie beds. And you can patchwork these, you know, these little plots together like a quilt, and come up with almost, you know, a sub-acre farm. And from the different, you know, depending on where you live and the types of crops you grow and the access to markets that you have, you can make between $27,000 and $72,000 a year on half an acre of urban farmland. Because you can grow a lot sooner in cities. There's something called the heat island effect, where all the concrete and the buildings in cities, we actually retain heat in cities. And so we have fewer frost-free days in cities. And you can extend the growing season quite dramatically in a city as opposed to the surrounding countryside.
Good. Finally, and we only have 2 minutes for this.
Okay.
Talk about the, well, you partly did on fruits and vegetables that fare better in urban settings, but what would be some of the fruits and vegetables you would emphasize?
Well, tree fruits are great, you know, apples and cherries and things that sort of look after themselves more or less. And I think what's important to recognize is we already have a lot of fruit production happening in cities. Usually what is happening now are these fruit rescue societies where they identify fruit trees in neighborhoods where, you know, if the tree is old enough, it will produce way more apples or way more walnuts or whatever than one family can handle. So, you know, you can always go online and find a fruit rescue society, and you don't have to plant your own fruit tree, but it's nice if the city starts planting edibles instead of ornamentals, because we might as well be able to graze our parks rather
Great
than
idea.
Just, yeah.
Well, Jennifer, thank you for the book, Food in the City, Urban Agriculture and the New Food Revolution. The website is foodgirl.squarespace.com. All the best to you on this.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Gary Knoll. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Now, Mike Fader coming up next with Occupy Territory.
Give me now.